At this time, the National Broadcasting Company will attempt to present another in the series of special programs direct from Shanghai, China. If Trans-Pacific reception permits, you will hear on today's program talks by Hullet Ovind, Far Eastern correspondent for the New York Times, and Miss Fania Graham of the United Press, who is at present given credit for being the only woman newspaper correspondent in the Shanghai region. We take you now to Shanghai, China.
Hello, America. This is George Shecklin of RCA Communications speaking to you from Shanghai, China, and bringing you once again an interesting program from the metropolis of war-torn China. Our first speaker is Mr. Hullet Ovind, China correspondent of the New York Times, who for the last 8 years has been giving the readers of that journal an accurate picture of events in Old Cathay. I am sure you will thoroughly appreciate his talk. I give you Mr. Hullet Ovind.
Speaking from Shanghai, it is difficult to believe that this message will be heard at home in the late hours of a quiet afternoon or the early hours of a peaceful evening, or that these words will reach fellow Americans out of a peaceful sky upon which millions of people may look without dread. Here in Shanghai, it is the dawn of a new day, and in all this distracted land, no one this morning looks to the sky with hope nor with gladness. Instead, we scan the heavens, fearing to see the soaring argosies of hate, which shower ruin and death on every side. In many cities in China this morning, great billows of smoke are graying the sky. Smoke from fires started yesterday or last night by crashing aerial bombs or bursting shells. And the one certainty of the next 24 hours is that devastation will be more widespread before tomorrow's sunrise, and that at least several thousand uniformed men and uncounted civilians will be killed or maimed and torn instead of opening their eyes happily upon a new day. The origins and issues of this terrible conflict cannot be analyzed in a short talk. Diplomats and propagandists on both sides are shrilling into the ears of the world accusations and charges, each seeking to condemn the other for what is occurring here, and the verdict of history is still far away. But for the Chinese people, this conflict is an unmitigated tragedy. As a people, they have had nothing to do with the origins of this undeclared war. And no matter who is the victory, the Chinese people will be the ultimate losers in everything, except a new moral stamina and a deepened realization of the necessity for unity. Mankind has tried for years to veil and cushion the horrors of war with various so-called civilized conventions. Theoretically, struggles of this kind are conducted between uniformed men who are fully aware of the risks and hazards of the profession of arms. Also, theoretically, the wounded are given every care that the spirit of mercy can devise, and those who are luckless enough to become prisoners of war are to be well treated. But here in China, we have war stripped of all of these conventions. This struggle is terrible and stark, and in many respects has gone back to the ways of savagery. Primitive hatreds have been loosed in this part of the world, and primitive methods of satisfying these hatreds now prevail. It will come as a shock to the American public, but in this war, no prisoners are taken by either side. Small trapped detachments, either Japanese or Chinese, who emerge from dugouts, hand in the air in token of surrender, are shot down in their tracks. And both sides frankly admit a crowning horror. Even wounded soldiers are not made prisoners of war. They are shot where they lie, just as horses or dogs smashed in traffic accidents at home are shot by our policemen. The few exceptions to this rule are enemy aviators who are forced to land inside the lines of their foes, or occasional high officers who are kept alive because of information they may be forced to divulge. Another feature of this conflict, which will shock the humane instincts of mankind, is that individuals or large units, be they Chinese or Japanese, who may break or begin a retreat, are shot in the back by their own brothers in arms. The only withdrawals either army countenances are those which are ordered and planned beforehand, and merciless is the fate dealt out to those who waver, be the cause hunger, weariness, or despair. Even those who fall wounded inside their own lines have little luck, at least so far as the Chinese are concerned. There are not enough field hospitals, and there is a terrible shortage of trained surgeons and nurses. There is also a shortage of ambulances and trucks for bringing the wounded to Shanghai, and no agreement exists as to the roads nor hours for this traffic of anguish, so that caravans of wounded men are often bombed, shelled, or machine gunned from the air. China was not well prepared to care for her own maimed men. Even the great emergency hospitals in the foreign areas of Shanghai are lacking in the most ordinary necessities. Only a few days ago, a noted surgeon appealed for money with which to buy catgut for use in the operating room. Chinese women are serving bravely in the war hospitals and are enduring experiences that make them dry-eyed with a grief too deep for tears. But kind hands and willing hearts cannot take the place of training and professional skill. China has long been troubled by the poverty of her people and by the fact that there are literally millions of miserable beggars scattered all over this vast land. The Holocaust, which is underway today, will, unhappily, create new beggars by the hundreds of thousands. Already in Shanghai, in Beijing, in Tianjin, and in Canton, there are uncounted tens of thousands who have had their entire possessions blasted to rubbish and to dust. The frugal Chinese conduct business on a capital so small as to be unbelievable to the average American, and a single bomb hurled into a city street may demolish 100 shops and leave the owners penniless. Today's orgy of destruction is the more pitiable because China, economically, was just struggling to her feet and prosperity was reviving in the land when this storm of war burst upon the Chinese people and bombs from the sky began to blast into nothingness the fruits of years of labor and of thrift. The edge of the mind bells after a long repetition of horrors, and I wonder how accurate and vivid a picture of these events and conditions the American and European public derive from the news dispatches. My associate in the New York Times office here, Anthony Billingham, could tell you what a bomb means. For just a month ago today, he was grievously wounded in the bombing of Sincere's department store. But Billingham is not in Shanghai this morning. His arm in a sling, he left yesterday afternoon to motor to Suzhou. And now he is somewhere along the Chinese front line. With good luck, he will be back in Shanghai tonight, but one never knows. Here in Shanghai, the sun is climbing rapidly out of the China Sea, and Japanese airplanes, literally hundreds of them, are climbing into the skies to scatter into groups of twos and tens and twenties and shower devastation over this hapless land. Watching this orgy of killing and destruction, one cannot but wonder why, and wonder what will the outcome be. The sanest hope appears to be that each of these peoples will, in the end, be forced to recognize the other as a worthy foe, that the victor will not be too ungenerous, and that the final terms of peace will be so sane that the like of what is now going on will not recur again.
And so ends an interesting and serious talk by Mr. Harry Robbins. It was interesting to me, and I know it was interesting to you. There now comes to you a talk in a little lighter vein by the First Lady to speak from Shanghai since the hostilities started. Miss Fanya Graham, ex-Hollywood publicity writer, and now serving on the staff of the United Press, we believe the only woman correspondent in the war zone, will tell you of her impression. I give you Miss Graham.
I've never been in a war before. I hope never to be in another one. But I'm glad I'm in Shanghai now. I went to Hollywood because I was tired of reporting what color lingerie feminine screen stars preferred. What male stars demanded of their ideal women. All I know of the world was what I had seen in process shops. Mine was a world of make-believe. I am what is known in China as a griffin, a newcomer. Therefore, sharing this program with Mr. Arben, a distinguished correspondent, I shall make no attempt to explain this undeclared war. I shall try only to interest you in what life is like in Shanghai for an American girl who has never been outside her native shores before this venture. Or should I say, adventure. I arrived in Shanghai on July the 12th. For a month I dined and danced and swam and had a light time. thanks to Shanghai's world-famous hospitality. Few persons took the war threat seriously. Then hostilities broke out in the Shanghai area. The city was on the verge of panic. What was going to happen? Nobody knew. What happened was Bloody Saturday for this precious bombing. That night, I saw the places where the bombs had fallen, the huge craters they had made. I walked through streets flooded with water to drain the blood away. I saw empty, battered rickshaws standing desolate. Their pullers, the crowds that had thrown those areas, in hospitals and in morgues. China and Japan may not have declared war, but to us in Shanghai, it can seem like nothing else. Depressing days followed. Hundreds evacuated. Ships left almost daily, but no one was in the mood to toss confetti. Curfew was enforced. Shanghai's exquisite night skyline was no more. No nightclubs and cabarets, no movies, no social events. My tourist friends were all leaving. I didn't want to go, but to stay in a darkened, desolate city with nothing to do. I wanted a job, and I found it with the United Press. John Morris, the Far Eastern manager, did his best to talk me out of wanting it. He painted gruesome pictures of what might happen, but I was too proud to be frightened. Incidentally, a word of advice to any footsteps stand for. Take all the letters of introduction you can get. Look what one helped to do for me. And the other American girl, Globetrotter, who remained, Charlene Armstrong of Connecticut, became the first American woman. If she went world touring looking for romance, she found it. That hasn't happened to me, though, at least not yet. And Charlene met her husband through a letter of introduction. I had heard before the war that most Shanghai firms observed a six-hour business day. Perhaps, but that isn't true of a news agency that's supplying headlines to all the world. Yet those of us who have more work to do than a 24-hour day will permit are the most fortunate. We haven't the time or the energy to be frightened. Actually getting an hour off to have a finger wave, such luxury. Beauty parlor business, by the way, is just one-tenth of normal. Yet Shanghai a day is doing her best to return to normalcy. Nearly all shops are open. Stocks may need replenishing. The fashions may not be direct from Paris and from New York, but it's possible to get almost anything you need. Anything, that is, except mail from home. May I say very wistfully that I haven't had a letter for 4 weeks, but I'll let my Pollyanna streak assert itself. Think of that big batch I'll have, all at once, when and if the mail does arrive. The few nightclubs that have opened are crowded. Saturday night, I went dancing for the first time since hostilities began. The thought of wearing an evening gown never even occurred to me. Well, I was the only woman in that crowded nightclub who wasn't fan like that. I know better this time. At 11:15, the place was packed. At 11:20, it had been evacuated completely, for curfew begins at 11:30. My escort and I would have liked to linger, for, as working press, we both had curfew passes. Evidently, the orchestra didn't, though. Shanghai today is the bachelor girl's paradise. So many, many men remain, and so few women. My work, of course, revealed my social isolation. But the few girls I had met tell me they'd never been so thought of. To see one girl surrounded by six men in a restaurant isn't at all unusual. The war has oppressed us all. Yet, despite that, many of us have retained our sense of humor. I shall never forget, for example, what two British girls I knew did on the eve of their evacuation. They burnt their love letters. Let them fall into the hands of Japanese or Chinese troops? Not those letters. It's no easy task, by the way, to decide what to take when you're permitted only one suitcase. Everybody's written a travel book, but no one has listed the things to take when evacuating. Such a treatise would have been a bestseller in Shanghai. In fact, it's so difficult to decide that if I were compelled to leave suddenly, I'd do it with a toothbrush in one hand and an evening dress in the other. The evening dress, because it will always remain my most treasured souvenir of Shanghai. Made by a Chinese tailor, it cost all of 11 Shanghai dollars, or about 3.5 American. I've never worn it.
You have been listening to talks by Hollett Aubind, Far Eastern correspondent of the New York Times, and Miss Fania Graham, woman correspondent for the United Press. Miss Graham and Mr. Aubind spoke directly from Shanghai, China, and were heard on one of the special Shanghai programs brought to you by way of RCA Communications Incorporated and the National Broadcasting Company.
I see. Well, it's an